88.3 Southern FM, local and live.
And coming up right now is the Space Show. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, Australian composer Amanda Lee Falkenberg and her Moons Symphony, which celebrates the moons of our solar system, including the one you call the moon.
Trip to the moon. Come on, let's go for the moon. I wanna go to the moon. Let's take a trip to the moon.
If you ask me how many moons are in our solar system, my answer would be, it depends. It depends on what you call a moon. It depends on whether you count only confirmed moons or also include provisionally identified moons. Do you count only those orbiting the eight planets, or do you add those orbiting dwarf planets? And what about those orbiting asteroids? Now, for example, if you count only those orbiting the eight planets, then there are 164 confirmed moons and a further 43 provisional moons. If you expand your count to include the dwarf planets, you add an extra 8 confirmed moons and 1 provisional moon. That's 214 moons before we even start on the moons of asteroids. Amanda Lee Falkenberg is an Australian who learned to play the piano at a very young age. She spent years in ballet studios as an accompanist. In the year 2000, she joined the Australian Ballet. Not content to spend her life on this worthwhile endeavour, she began writing over 120 pieces of music to accompany ballet dancers as they trained. In 2003, she wrote her first full-length orchestral ballet, then moved on to compose for film, television, and stage productions. In 2017, Falkenberg came across an article titled 10 of the Weirdest Moons of Our Solar System. She immediately decided they needed some emotional music to catapult them into public consciousness. That was the genesis of Falkenberg's The Moons Symphony. Now, before we delve deeply into the story and music of the moons, let us allow Amanda to demonstrate her skill as a pianist with Claude Debussy's image of a dreamy, moonlit sky. Here she is playing Clair de Lune.
Thank you.
Amanda Falkenberg, Claire de Lune. Now, with over 200 moons to choose from, Amanda had to be choosy. She whittled the number down to 6 and later added our moon as a 7th. Speaking in 2021, Amanda picks up the story of her moon's symphony.
It's been 18 months since Nicole and I presented the vision for the Moon Symphony, graciously hosted by Chris and Cynthia Bake, and we have exciting updates to share. While still in London, we took the opportunity to record the two soloists for the 7th movement, an exquisite interpretation by Joshua Abrams and a powerful performance by Daniel Cook. It was so exciting hearing these exceptional voices breathe life into this project. The summer and symphony were off to a fantastic start. The very next month, the Moon Symphony received a special invitation to participate at the largest gathering for planetary scientists in Geneva. The highlight was hearing music from the 6th movement, Ganymede, fill the Jupiter Hall while watching the scientists' reactions. Then back to London, we had another amazing opportunity for exposure, a private event hosted by the wonderful Andrea and Gregor Hamilton, another chance to beta test the concept via audience reaction. The feedback was truly mind-blowing, and all the more reason to get back to my studio in Dubai to prepare for Phase 2, the music scores. It was an enormous task to convert the 45 minutes of virtual music to a notated musical score. I was starting from scratch, putting one note at a time on the stave as though they were one from a million grains of sand. Laborious, long, and technical, but a critical part of our mission. Concentration was at its highest levels. Then, COVID hit planet Earth. To keep the project moving forwards, we hired 12 singers from the London Voices to record from their home studios to check that the full chorus was working as intended. I also held Zoom sessions with professional woodwind and string players who had looked over each part's playability. We were now ready to execute a plan for a professional recording. We dreamed big and shot for the moon. We compiled the dream team, the London Symphony Orchestra, the London Voices at Abbey Road Studios. But who would be the conductor?
There's one particular conductor that you would love to work on this project. Who is she?
Maren Allsop. As someone who, you know, can change the world through music, I just think it's going to be Maren Allsop.
And fortuitously for us, she was interested. Dreams really do come true. Morale was soaring high. After 12 laborious months, the music scores were finally completed, and now with Maren on board as official conductor, this third essential piece of the moon's puzzle had materialised for our grand mission. With Maren currently chief conductor of the Vienna Symphony Orchestra, Maren and I hitched a plan for her orchestra to read through the symphony ahead of the professional recording. I travelled to Vienna for our official score signing ceremony before the orchestral read-through. The results? It was a miracle this could even happen, with Vienna appearing like the only orchestra on the planet who were able to play and perform in somewhat normal conditions. Then, our Abbey Road Studios venue took a different trajectory. The session cancelled due to our large-scale production and the pandemic. But the universe works in mysterious ways. At the same time, the world-class Abu Dhabi Music Festival showed great interest in the Moon Symphony and have now come on board to co-fund a virtual video world premiere performance at their esteemed 2021 festival. So this required a venue change for multi-camera setup to capture the performance in London. Moving into January 2021, and it too is off to a fantastic start. The Planetary Society, based in Los Angeles, whose notable CEO is Bill Nye, the science guy, has been introduced to the Moon Symphony, and in January will feature it in an upcoming episode on their prestigious planetary radio show with host Matt Kaplan. Joining the conversations will be retired astronaut Nicole Stott and lead NASA scientist Dr. Linda Spilker, who together we will talk about the evolution of the project and its future goals and initiatives. With the Moon Symphony's appearance on the Planetary Radio Show, aired on 120 public channels, along with the inclusion at the prestigious Abu Dhabi Music Festival, we feel are two giant steps for the Moon Symphony and will help with momentum as we build towards our ultimate goal, the world premiere live performances at Royal Albert Hall and Walt Disney Concert Hall, followed by a global world tour with Maren Alsop conducting and leading our Moon's mission. We are all optimistic about the Moon Symphony recording next year and the return to concert halls so we can continue the journey of beaming its message of hope, wonder and inspiration all over Spaceship Earth.
At an event held at the meeting in Glasgow of the Council of Parties to the Paris Climate Accords, Amanda Falkenberg spoke about the genesis of the project and of plans to record her symphony.
Space means many things to many people, but the one thing I think we all agree on is that space fills us with awe, and no one can deny the absolute beauty of the cosmos. And with these heightened vibrations of awe and wonder, its powerful frequencies transcends. It inspires, and it wants us to do something with its energy. So, as artist and composer, when I first gazed upon these moons locked in the vacuum of space, I wanted to break them free from that eternal vault of silence. So this collection of dynamic moons found their way into the Moon Symphony, which celebrates art, astronomy, astronauts, and science, where science drove the entire creative process. This symphony offers a rich audio and visual experience, merging the worlds of music and science to dramatise past, present and future moon explorations while offering fresh perspectives of our own home planet. The hope is that by giving melodic identification to each moon, one will be transported to these fascinating worlds on a powerful journey back to Earth. The libretto is anchored in scientific accuracy that is drawn from consultation with some of the world's greatest planetary scientists from NASA, the European Space Agency, the Johns Hopkins University, and astronauts from the International Space Station. The stunning visuals have been provided by award-winning space artists. And soon, our mission will be joined by world-renowned conductor Maren Alsop, leading the prestigious London Symphony Orchestra for its professional recording in 2022.
Collaborating with Falkenberg was former NASA astronaut Nicole Stott, a veteran of two space missions.
I cannot wait for you to experience what my friend Amanda has created for, you know, for humanity, quite honestly, but for you to hear today. And part of that inspiration comes through the experience that astronauts have had in space. So I'm going to act as the representative for the experience that astronauts have had in space. I will start by sharing with you that I had the opportunity to spend over two missions, over 100 days, primarily on the International Space Station. And in order to get to space, to live and work there for even a short period of time, to return home safely, that's a pretty complex thing to do. But in all that time, all of that experience, I came back to Earth, what I consider to be three very simple, kind of grounding, yet compelling lessons. And the first is, We live on a planet. I know. You know, we learn these things that I'm going to share with you probably when we're 5 years old. And yet somehow we don't keep them with us on a day-to-day basis. And I think we need to learn how to do that. We live on a planet. We are all earthlings. And the only border that matters is that thin blue line of atmosphere that blankets and protects us all. Now, when I was in space, as I said, the majority of my time was on the International Space Station, this masterpiece in space. I could talk all day and the significance in it. Best example of living off the grid that you can find, absolutely. World-class science and world-class science laboratories. I mean, that was the whole goal of building this space station. The international partnerships that are what this is built on. For over 20 years, people from over 15 countries, represented by 5 international space agencies, have been living peacefully and successfully in this place with their mission off the Earth for the Earth. Everything being done here is ultimately about improving life on Earth. And I love that I can also say that as this international partnership, we are there together for the planet. And I love that that's part of the mission statement for this year's COP26 activities as well. So in this place, this mechanical life support system that we've built in space to mimic as best we can what Earth does for us naturally. The crew members who live there, the astronauts, every day we are acutely aware of how much CO2 is in our atmosphere, how much clean drinking water we have, the integrity of our thin metal hull, and absolutely of the health and well-being of all our crewmates. Because we know that in order for us to just survive there, before doing any of the science we're going to do there, we have to pay attention to those things. And that's why I would argue that this program, this place in space, is the best example for how we should be living as crewmates here on Spaceship Earth. Okay, so we go to this place in space, right? Because we can look at things from a whole new perspective. We can take gravity out of the equation, which means for the science, we can discover new things about stuff we thought we knew a lot about and then bring those lessons back to Earth with us. But we're also looking at things like all of the measures of our planet. Over 50% of the data that we use to understand how our planet is changing is coming to us from space, from satellites, from instruments, and from the activities that are happening on board the International Space Station. It's like we can watch the planet breathe. We can get the vital signs of the planet and then apply that information to the solutions to the very challenging problems that we have here on Earth. Now, we're not just using the science, right? We're not just using these instruments to observe Earth. We, the astronauts, are observing Earth as well. And there's a pretty compelling positive impact that comes through that, which I think is what feeds in beautifully to Amanda's creation of this symphony that you'll learn about today. We look at Earth in a totally different way. We, even though you shouldn't have to go to space to know this, we learn those three simple lessons. The planet, Earthlings, thin blue line, it is our reality in this place. And I know as humans, like even coming here today, when I came by myself, it's kind of human nature to look for the familiar, right? To want to find, ooh, where's that person that, you know, that I know? I was looking for Amanda. And we do that same thing from our spaceships. I consider Florida my home. I wanted to see Florida from space. And then, as you look out the window and you're getting to know this planet better, you know, the deserts of Australia from the deserts in Africa, just by the patterns and the colors, and experiencing all of that, the Earth kind of evolving into this work of art with these surprises every time you look out the window, I remember looking at it and feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm discovering the interconnectivity of everything, which then drives us to understand the interdependence of everything. And where that became the most clear to me was in watching the Earth at night and storms on Earth. I grew up in Florida, I told you. I used to think storms just happened over me. It was lightning over me, and then when it was gone, it was gone. But there's not a single thing happening on Earth that is not in one way or another wrapping around the planet and affecting everything else. That was my, like, my lesson in interconnectivity. And I believe that for us to solve our problems down here, we have to recognize that in our daily lives. We have to accept that everything, everyone that we share this planet with is interconnected. And then I always wanted to look, still see Florida from space. Florida's in this picture too. It's kind of coming in from the right side of the picture. It's part of this beautiful blue image that you can see the Bahamas down to Cuba stretching out towards South America. And I think when you look at this, even though I still think of Florida as a special place, it is a special place that's a part of a planet that's my home. There is no denying when you look at an image like this that we live on a planet.
Former NASA astronaut Nicole Stott, and you're listening to The Space Show.
On FM, online, 24/7, this is 88.3 Southern FM.
Amanda and Nicole had previously collaborated to mark the 50th anniversary of the first human mission to orbit the moon, Apollo 8.
In 2018, I became a member of the IAAA, a space arts organisation whose members include well-published and noted planetary scientists. And that is how Nicole Stott and I came into each other's orbit. Back in 2018, Nicole reached out to IAAA members asking for artwork for an event to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 8 mission at the Kennedy Space Center that December. She had listened to excerpts that I'd shared with the IAAA community from the Moon Symphony and sent me an email asking if I would be interested in writing music for a 5-minute Apollo 8 tribute video that they would also be showing at the event. Being asked to partner with an astronaut was one thing, but what equally resonated was that the Apollo 8 was an iconic mission for humanity. The first crewed mission to the moon and the first time our planet was seen with human eyes rising above the horizon of another planetary body, our Earth moon. This mission was made famous because of astronaut Bill Anders' photograph, perfectly known as Earthrise, which became the most influential environmental image ever taken. Knowing the impact this photo made on the world and combining this image with the story of the seventh movement was going to be a powerful partnership to help amplify the message for the crowning moment of this symphony. I had not begun composing the seventh movement, but I emotionally knew the atmosphere I wanted to create. Music charged with the highest vibrations of love, awe, and reverence. So aligning the seventh movement with this image made enormous sense to me, as I too wanted to create a musical impact. So I told Nicole it would be my honour to help craft the music. So now, with that story shared, let's turn our attention to the story of the seventh movement. In my many conversations with Nicole, she explained that when astronauts return to Earth, they struggle to find words to communicate their experiences. And so I thought, here's my chance for music to take over when words fail.
The two were both influenced by the book written by Frank White, The Overview Effect.
There is something important about people just understanding what is going on up there. Space Shuttle and ISS astronaut Nicole Stott. Experiencing the Earth as a unified whole is more than an idea for astronauts. It is a powerful reality. It is a message from the universe, not to space flyers alone, but to all of humanity. Now the question is, how can larger numbers of people get that message?
With the enlightened experiences of astronauts and the brilliant minds of scientists, we have a vision to inspire the daylights out of everyone back here on Spaceship Earth, to encourage new perspectives about our home as we contemplate who and where we are in this place. Through concert halls, outdoor stadiums, festivals and planetariums, we wish to spread the message that whatever culture, colour or creed, we are unified by the cosmic dust that shapes our moons, stars and galaxies. And together we share this universal thread of interconnectivity. On behalf of our team of scientists, astronauts, artists and musicians, thank you for joining our outer solar system adventure, where it's hoped that through the power of symphony, space and science, you will be inspired to join our planetary campaign to spread these glorious vibrations of awe and wonder all over planet Earth. Thank you.
The Planetary Society is a United States advocacy group for exploration of the solar system. In many respects, it's very similar to the Space Association of Australia, which is the presenter of this radio program here on Southern FM. Now, the Planetary Society's Matt Kaplan has been very supportive of the Moon's Symphony project and to the extent of going to London to attend the recording sessions.
What an ensemble. I mean, I couldn't see everyone, but I counted six percussionists, two harps. This is just amazing. I guess it's what this piece calls for, right, Amanda?
Well, we're talking about space. And isn't space pretty epic? And so we need...
Space is big.
Space is big. So you can't go sort of, shortchanging your ensemble for, trying to produce an epic piece like this. You call on all forces to get the point across about these fascinating worlds and moons. And especially when you've got a moon like Io, which is the most volcanically active moon in the solar system, you've got to pull on all forces you can to get the message across.
This is a representational piece. I mean, I think of other pieces like Claude Debussy's La Mer, the sea. Even Beethoven.
Pastoral.
The pastoral, absolutely, the sixth. And, of course, you can't avoid bringing up Gustav Holst. We're in his home nation, the planets. But the planets was more of a metaphysical thing, whereas this, if I'm right, Amanda, you were really attempting to capture the true nature of these moons.
And I'm so much in a more advantageous situation than Holst was. He didn't have the technology 100 years ago like I have access to, and all these deep space missions that they're achieving and succeeding in getting data back. I'm sure if he was alive right now, he'd probably be doing this sort of thing. So I wanted to capitalize on the advancement of where we are with technology. And, like I said, it's a situation where I came across the science and I just couldn't ignore it. And hence why I've employed the choir to sing the science. So this is very much what we call programmatic music, which talks about scenes, and it's very unashamedly telling the story as opposed to an abstract, approach to composing where you allow the audience to come up with their own story and dialogue. This is very much science-driven. So it's like the script to tell the story, which is the science.
I'd hope you can expand on that. I mean, where a piece like this fits into the vast classical repertoire.
I think something like this, the Moon Symphony, has a very strong possibility to become part of the repertoire because it also reaches out across disciplines. And, it's a piece that we could use in educating kids. We can go out to schools. We can speak to scientists. We can speak to – I mean, I had lunch with an astronaut today. I was pretty excited. And I imagine that the way Amanda could build it out as a complete project for orchestras, it could be very fulfilling and also really establish the piece.
Up in Glasgow, Falkenberg introduced the movements of the symphony.
Today, 6 musical excerpts will be played for each moon, showcasing stories based on scientific data collected by space probes, providing a theatrical voice that celebrates the collective achievements from space agencies and their remarkable scientists and engineers. The vision is for concerts to be held across the globe to communicate the importance of these missions, which embodies the spirit of cooperation, unified by passion and a common goal of achieving highly successful, mind-blowing, inspirational space missions. The seventh movement is the crowning moment of the symphony and offers a discovery of a different kind, where its story is told through the emotional data experienced through the hearts of astronauts. For the seventh movement, which contains a powerful message as one experiences new perspectives of our home, as we stand together on our moon, just in time to experience Earthrise.
And now on the space show, let's begin exploring those moons. Moon names. Miranda. One of the larger moons of the planet Uranus, Miranda was discovered in 1948 by Gerard Kuiper. The following year, he named it for the heroine of Shakespeare's play, The Tempest. Miranda's surface shows bizarre hybrid features that make it look like it has been blasted apart and then reassembled. It hosts the solar system's tallest cliff, the 20-kilometre-high Verona Rupes. Like other features on Miranda, this is named after places mentioned in Shakespeare's plays. The moon is nearly 500 kilometres in diameter and is made of 60% water ice.
This tiny satellite of Uranus, called Miranda, is named after a character from the Shakespearean play The Tempest. A seemingly appropriate name, since this complicated world appeared to tell a story that rivaled the drama of its own namesake. Miranda is one of the closest moons to Uranus, and inner moons experience the most violent impacts from incoming projectiles. Scientists are divided about their theories and the events that transpired that have scarred Miranda's terrain, leaving a patchwork of macabre mutations etched into her surface. However, Miranda claims one monument to her name, a giant ice cliff, the tallest cliff in the solar system. The next excerpt explores her tempestuous past, and the raw photo and video footage is a silent testament to the harsh, violent, and unforgiving edges of our outer solar system.
We're now going to hear the track Miranda from Amanda Lee's Falkenberg's The Moons Symphony.
Thank you.
To two more moons. They represent the fifth and sixth movements in the Moon's Symphony. This strange little rock is called Miranda, which I assume you chose not because its name is similar to yours, but because it's, well, gentlemen, it's kind of a weirdo, isn't it, Ashley? I mean, just geologically, this is a strange it's place.
It's a moon of Uranus.
This was observed by Voyager on a flyby. So we've only seen one half of it. It looks as if the moon has been smashed apart and it just sort of smushed itself back together again. Some other internal process might have caused this, but there's really a lot about it we don't know. One of the mysteries of the outer solar system. It's interesting that this ties now into this decadal survey,
yes,
which has just been released. The highest priority from the science community is to send a new mission back to the outer solar system. And it's about time, too, to go to Uranus and explore the moons of Uranus and include getting an image of the other side of this thing. We've only seen half of it, so it's really intriguing to know what the other half looks like.
We should clarify the decadal study survey made with these recommendations made that do guide a lot of planetary science in the years to come. Decadal, 10 years, ends up being even more than that. The number one recommendation for a new mission is a Uranus orbiter. But the top recommendation is to get those samples back to Mars, which we've been working on for so many years. And that is quite a distraction from exploring many other parts of the solar system. So we're hoping that NASA will be able to accomplish all of these things. I'd talked to so many scientists who have been saying, ice giants, we must visit the ice giants, Uranus and Neptune, because
not only are they fascinating in themselves, but they represent many of the worlds that we are seeing circling other stars, right? Exoplanets.
That's
yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, we see planets in resonances, and some of them, okay, some of them are probably volcanic. We've seen planets which might have magma oceans on the surface. We see planets in orbital resonances, and you cannot help but think, I wonder if there are volcanoes there. And again, and volcanism is a vital process in the evolution of planets. I think it's just a matter of time before we really start to nail down just how many of these worlds out there, these thousands of exoplanets that have been found, are indeed actually volcanically active.
And ice giants are interesting because so many of the exoplanets we've found fall in that size range, about the size of a Uranus or a Neptune. And so by studying these worlds in our own solar system, we're getting clues about what these other exoplanets might be like as well. And then the Uranus mission also is carrying a probe. And that probe is to go into the atmosphere of the planet itself, and then you'll start to make comparisons. The Galileo probe at Jupiter, now you'll have a Uranus probe as well.
Something to look forward to. It's many years off, but thank goodness it's now maybe coming into the pipeline.
This is the Space Show.
88.3 Southern FM.
Moon names. Ganymede. Now, Ganymede is one of the four moons discovered orbiting the planet Jupiter by Galileo in 1610. It was named in 1613 by Simon Marius after the mythological young boy who was carried to Olympus by Jupiter, disguised as an eagle. Now, Ganymede then became the cupbearer of the Olympian gods. Ganymede is the largest moon in the solar system, with a diameter of 5,270 kilometres. It is larger than the planet Mercury and the dwarf planet Pluto. Ganymede is the only moon known to have its own magnetic field and aurora around its poles. It takes 7 days to orbit Jupiter.
We return to Jupiter to explore Ganymede, the largest moon in our solar system and the only non-moon with its own intrinsic magnetic field, and was the biggest discovery that came out of the Galileo mission that toured the Jovian system in the 90s. This sixth movement is divided into two sections. The first explores the phenomenal science taking place at Ganymede, while the second plays tribute and turns the telescope to Earth, to 1610, to explore the story of a scientist who combed night skies with groundbreaking telescope on a quest for truths. We celebrate the famed Italian astronomer Galileo Galilei and his colossal discoveries. The next excerpt tells the story of his giant revelations, his conflicts with the church, and the advent of modern science.
Thank you.
We are going to give this next moon very short shrift, which we shouldn't because it's a big moon, Ganymede, that Amanda turned into the sixth movement of the Moon Symphony.
Well, Ganymede is the biggest moon in the solar system. It is caught in the same resonance that drives activity on Io and likely within Europa. It almost certainly has an ocean underneath an icy crust. It has a magnetic field, which is very unusual for these moons, and that tells us something about the interior structure and the interior composition. It also has a surface which has been torn apart in places and reformed. It's got a very interesting geomorphology or morphology, and there's a lot about it we don't know. And the interesting thing is, or the exciting thing is, that NASA is building Europa Clipper to go and study Europa. The European Space Agency is building a mission right as we speak called the Jupiter System ICE Satellite It's called JUICE.
JUICE.
I can't remember. I admit it. I can't remember what the acronym stands for. It's called JUICE. It's the ICE, and it's going to be visiting...
Jupiter ICE... Oh, God.
There we go. Let's not go there.
ICE means
yes,
explorer.
It's called JUICE. And it's going to study Ganymede and Callisto, the outermost of the four large Galilean satellites. There's going to be some overlap with Europa Clipper, which is great. It's going to be a really exciting time to be in planetary science. I can't wait for all this to happen.
What intrigued you, Amanda? Why? There's so many other moons to choose from, too.
Well, okay, so it's the biggest moon in the solar system. That was a bit of a hands down. But the magnetic field really intrigued me because the science that it's offering to scientists as a laboratory to learn more about other magnetic fields, because it is embedded in Jupiter's own magnetosphere, and these conditions protect it from the solar winds. But the second half, I wanted to just sort of change the format for this last of the science moons, if you like, and pay tribute to our Galileo Galilei, the discoverer of all these Galilean moons back in 1610. So the second half is very celebratory, saluting him, the father of modern science, and his colossal discoveries back in 1610 with his handheld telescope. And wow, what if he lived in our times right now? So I wanted to give him justice and give him a voice in this move.
The excited voice of Amanda Lee Falkenberg, the Australian who has composed the Moon's Symphony. She has recorded it with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Muireann Alsop, and the London Voices, conducted by Ben Parry. And this has been the first of four programs discussing the Moon's Symphony. Well, this has been the Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie. We'll be back next week. So please tune in again next week for the Space Show and more about the Moon's Symphony. We'll go through all the seven moons that Amanda has done.